He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing and pinch hitting for me there as I've got laptops failing everywhere. I'm just looking at the little Mac, you know, the little Apple. The little Apple's just sitting there.
The pinwheel of death.
Yes, yes. It's always an epic moment when your laptop fails and your phone won't pull anything up all at once. So glorious technology failure. But you know what, Julian, you were spectacular there, my friend.
I give you a seven.
I give you a solid 8. You were kind of thrown into
handling the pressure. You get a 10.
Right.
I think the read and the enthusiasm about a 6.5 and a 7 maybe.
Well, we all have iPhones, so
yeah. Well, I couldn't get it to pull up. It wouldn't pull up. I was trying. All of my technology
like
failed me
problem.
At once. Wow, Julian, lots of hate.
Sounds
coming.
Like a personal.
I'm just
problem.
Saying you can only be so excited about an update when literally everyone has a smartphone.
Oh! Sorry. I thought you meant I should have pulled it up on my iPhone. I was trying.
We should have known there was another
I
layer
was
of this.
Yeah, it's like if you want to know these things, you can easily pop it up on your phone.
Hey, but fear
unless
not.
Unless your dad texts you and says you're using too much data, like mine does. Too much data.
That's amazing.
Your dad pays for your cell phone bill?
No, I pay for my own cell phone bill. But
why is he complaining about your data usage?
Family plan.
Because family plan is still the most intelligent way to pay your bill. I just send him money all the time.
You know what I have to get to the actual point of this segment, but I love when you restart your computer and it comes up with a message first. It says, you shut down your computer because of a problem. And it's like, really? I didn't realize that. No, I just thought, like,
are you okay with this?
I'm going to have
yes or no
with this particular computer someday. I'm going to have that office space moment where I'm going to take it out into a
damn
parking
it feels
lot,
good to be a gangster.
And I'm just going to destroy it, and I'm going to
well,
film
Julian
that for
and
the
I,
world.
Julian and I both have purchased new laptops in the last whatever it is for 3 or 4 months.
Yes,
so
yes, I know.
You need to join the club, buddy.
I'm very. I like to think of it as frugal. My wife says cheap. So, we've been talking about the Preds and the draft all morning, and you just heard. Obviously, we've got some great stuff that's going to be coming throughout the course of the day on it, and we'll continue to get you updated on it. However, we wanted to touch on one of the most prominent stories in sports right now because this has hit in a couple of different ways, and we'll start with Paul George is a good example of somebody that you're hearing a lot of in the NBA right now. The rumors continue to circulate that he's trying to get out of Indiana. He's told the team he will not resign. He would like to play for the Lakers. In the meantime, the Cavs are trying to acquire him in a three-way trade so that they can bring him on and help LeBron try and win a championship. And the Lakers are sitting back sort of patiently awaiting his arrival in L.A. whenever that may come. And he has made it apparent, according to most insiders, that he would like to be in L.A., not in Cleveland. And it's interesting to me because it brings up a conversation from another angle of a quote you saw,
yeah, I saw
from Cam Newton.
I saw this Charlotte Observer, Julian Council's Charlotte Observer, basically saying a quote from Cam Newton
the
saying.
Charlotte Disturber.
Oh.
Ooh.
Sounds like somebody plays on the fourth line for the Predators. I'm looking, quote from Cam Newton, I'm looking at my life right now and I'm saying I'm missing one thing. I want a Super Bowl. Yeah, it's really certain things that you have to really fine-tune and say, quote, am I deserving to be a Super Bowl-winning quarterback? How can I push myself to be better? There was some weird wording in there that I didn't do a good job of reading, but for the most part, he says, there's one thing missing in my life, and that's a Super Bowl championship. He's got his Heisman and a national championship ring. Did he win the MVP? I could have sworn he was the MVP. If not, he was very close.
Yeah, he was MVP in their Super Bowl.
That's what I thought. So he's kind of checked all the personal goal boxes, right? Like of what you could have. I mean, Heisman, national championship, and NFL MVP. There's not many. I bet you the list of people that have done that is pretty small,
right.
Actually. So he's got a pretty unbelievable resume. But that Super Bowl ring has eluded him. And we hear all the time. I think in the NBA, to your Paul George point, and I think in the NFL, to Cam Newton's point, championship rings are how we value people. Like, it's like whether you have won a chance. Like, Eli Manning is not a Hall of Fame quarterback. But he's going to go to the Hall of Fame because he won 2 Super Bowls, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
To me, he's sort of the example. Like, is Philip Rivers significantly less quarterback than Eli Manning?
No. But I think that Phillip Rivers is also going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Okay, that's fair.
So here's the real question: like, what is motivating athletes, and what should motivate athletes? Because each one is different. You have two total different opposite sides of the coin in perspective. You've got Cam saying the one thing I need is
like
Super
missing
Bowl
in my life.
Right.
Like that's.
And you got Paul George over here saying, trade me to the Lakers right now. I don't want to go to the Cavs. Now, the Cavs are purportedly trying to trade for Paul George and sign Carmelo Anthony to add to their existing lineup.
How can they do that?
Well, they'll,
how is that even possible?
They'll find a way. And
or are all of them going to get together in L.A.?
Well, I don't know.
That's
I doubt,
what I think is going to
happen. I doubt much of that. But right now, the Cavs want Paul George. And right now, Paul George wants to play for the Lakers. So Paul George is essentially saying, I don't want a ring. I want to go to L.A. because that's where I want to play.
No part of that could be Cavs are a sinking ship.
But even if they are, they're not a sinking ship this year. You have a better chance of winning the championship this year in Cleveland than you do anywhere other than maybe
but how
San Antonio
much,
and
when it comes to the trade, how much does Paul George have control? Like, the team has to trade him to Cleveland or
well,
L.A.
Yes, but he also dictated many of those terms when he brought to the public, and the Pacers GM has spoken out on this several times, that their great regret is that he made it a public issue by saying, I want to play for the Lakers, because it's limited the trade market from anybody else, because most people don't want to rent him and give up future assets to get him for one year.
His power and control in this is what he said, will not resign.
I'm not going anywhere but the Lakers.
Right, I'm not resigning a contract with anybody, meaning after this 1 year, his last year.
So he's essentially saying, I don't want, even if you're going to give me 1 year where I can just go to Cleveland and win a ring, I don't want that. I want to go play for a Lakers team that even with Lonzo Ball would be, it would be a stretch. They'll make the playoffs with Paul George probably.
I would assume with Ingram, Randall, although to trade for him, what are you going to have to give up? I don't think the Lakers will trade for him because I think they're just going to wait for him to walk in free agency and then just grab him. So I think you're right about the motivation. I mean, I've always said in the NFL that there's two players. There's guys that want to be great and guys that want to get paid. And you never know what category. I mean, we all know what category Albert Haynesworth falls into. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not that he's not a great guy. It's just we know that he's one of those pay guys. And there's the Troy Polamalus of the world that just want to be like the greatest of all time and lead their teams to championships or whatever. So I think it's interesting. What motivates people is one thing. But then how we as media and fans, because we have all these conversations about Jordan and LeBron and, you know, Brady versus Montana, and like all these major, you know, high-level conversations about who's the greatest or who's the best or who's this. And in those two sports, it doesn't feel like we talk about it in baseball. Like, we don't talk about it in baseball. We don't talk about it in hot. Like, is Pecorine's career, how differently will his career be viewed had he won that cup this year versus only being like really awesome and getting his team there? You know what I mean? Like, he was still great. Now he struggled in a couple of games against Pittsburgh. But Patrick Waugh, Martin Brodeur, Guy Lafleur, like the greatest goaltenders of all time, they all have lots of championships. So do we put too much value on winning a ring as defining of your career the way Cam Newton is talking about it? Because I think quarterbacks are measured that way. If you haven't like Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers got their championships out of the way, and like they instantly entered this other class. When you win a ring in the NFL, you enter a different tier of quarterback, and that's the way we view quarterbacks. And Cam's not in that group right now, and so I think that's why he sees it and goes, man, I need to get a ring. I don't think we overvalue it. I think it's the point of playing the game, but to suggest that one player is better than the other because he won a championship and the other guy didn't, I think there's a lot more extenuating circumstances than just that.
Yeah, I think it's totally overvalued. I mean, I'm not going to say that John Elway became a better quarterback because he won a Super Bowl finally when they gave him a running game that could help him do it. I'm not going to say Dan Marino wasn't a great quarterback because he didn't win a Super Bowl. I'm not going to value somebody differently. To me, winning a championship is a lot like having a number one song in the music industry. You can write a great song, but it still takes the right time, the right release, the right cycle. Did somebody else put out a song? Did you get the right push at the right time? How did your promo division do? Like, so there's so many different departments that make a number one song. If you value a number one as a success and a number two song as a failure, you're probably going to have a lot of failure in life. To me, I look at it and say a championship can elevate you for sure. And if you play incredible in championship moments, that elevates your perception.
That's what I was going to get
to. That's where Eli is. Eli plays incredible in championship moments.
And how many game-winning Super Bowl drives does Tom Brady have?
Right.
Four? I mean, and then Jordan. Jordan isn't Jordan without all those moments in the postseason where he dominated people. When the game was at its most important moment, and he, you know, one night he's got the flu, and the next guy he goes, you know, like then he hits a game-winning shot. The next night he's got the assist that is the game-winning assist. Like, Jordan was at his greatest and unstoppable in those moments, and what makes Jordan was that he went 6-0 and that he carried his team to those spots. Now, he had a good supporting cast. I mean, I get every team that wins a championship has to have a great supporting cast. But the big reason LeBron will never catch Jordan in many people's eyes is the championships, is he hadn't have the rings. Now, I don't think anyone – we all sort of look at LeBron's first one with the Cavs and go, oh, okay, it's not that big a deal. We know that that one didn't belong and that one didn't really count and it was okay to lose that one. But when you start going 2-4 or 3-6 or whatever it's going to end up being in the finals, that there has to be some level of that as being part of the equation.
You know, to me, it's about more than championships. It's about a bigger body of work. Well, I'll tell you what I mean. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Goff. I'm Jason Fitz. Hey, Julian, let's give away some free stuff. You in for
that?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay, good. All right. There's the excitement. There's the Monday
morning. Did he
surprise
you? Well, man, I keep trying to turn his mic on. It just won't do it.
No.
I
can hear you talking.
I'm at 50% rate at being able to turn the mic on properly.
You know what? It's okay. It's Monday.
Just a button, right?
It's Monday morning.
I got like an hour and a half of sleep last night.
So caller number five.
What was he doing?
I don't know. Caller number five.
Were you watching like reruns of North Carolina basketball tournament games this year?
No, I rewatched for like the 30th time, National Treasure, Book of Secrets, the second one.
Of course.
And I watched Nicolas Cage yell at people for about 2 hours and not try to go to sleep.
I don't know why I like
Sweet
this.
Nectar. Sweet Nectar
later,
God,
I'm
can I give
awake.
Away? Can I give away some stuff at this
oh,
point?
Oh, yeah.
I don't
yeah,
know you two let me give away some stuff.
I don't know
stuff.
Why I like those movies so much.
Caller number five, 615-737-1025, going to win a pair of tickets to the Southern Uprising Tour featuring Travis Tritt, Marshall Tucker Band, and the Outlaws at the Carl Black Chevy Woods Amphitheater at Fontenelle, one of my favorite places, Sunday, July 2nd, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, caller number five, going to win a pair of tickets.
The third Book of Secrets?
No, there's only two.
Oh, okay.
There's still, you know, I was actually looking this up while I couldn't fall asleep. I was like, man, when are they going to have another one of these out here? Because Nick Cage, I haven't seen him out here in a while, man.
I like those weird, what was the book with all the Illuminati and all that stuff?
That was the
Tom Hanks did the movie.
Oh, yeah. The code, Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code. Like those kind of things were like the old school, like all the things that are in those stupid Nicolas Cage movies. I don't know why I get so into those.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to D.C. like this weekend.
Oh.
So
you'll find all the Masonic symbols.
Basically, I'm going to reenact scenes as I always do in D.C.
Wow.
Apparently, there will be a third one eventually.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's in the works.
Very exciting.
It's been in the works like a decade.
It's very exciting.
Now, on to sports.
Dude, don't rip on Nicolas Cage.
Okay. I do not like Nicolas Cage at all. But we'll
get that.
Yeah, that's really neither here nor there. So earlier you were talking about championships, how we value them. And this is my whole concept on it. Like, I'm not going to let that one day or that one season or that one moment outweigh a body of work. So to me, when I look at LeBron James and the conversation of who's the best ever of all time, my when I weigh Michael Jordan, it's not just about championship moments. It's about regular season moments too. It's just about the fact that you felt like if anybody could win you a game in that moment, if you needed one shot to win one game in all of history, my mindset goes to Michael Jordan. So it doesn't go to LeBron James. But that's not just about the championships. That's just about sort of the aura around. And championships can be part of creating that aura. But again, I look at John Elway as a quarterback that I watched just destroy my Raiders my entire life growing up. He didn't suddenly become valued when he won a Super Bowl. I mean, I don't look at Jim Kelly and say Jim Kelly wasn't a Hall of Famer or wasn't a great quarterback because he lost four Super Bowls. I mean, my God, they went to four straight Super Bowls. So
which is an unbelievable accomplishment, but to not be able to finish. I mean, now again, one of those was the kicker's fault. I mean, you could blame Scott Norwood, or you could say, "Hey, Jim, finish the drive in the end zone." I mean, that's what we always say: don't blame kickers for those sorts of moments. I think your point about being great and a Hall of Famer, totally. Dan Marino, Hall of Famer, no question. Maybe Phillip Rivers is a Hall of Famer, no question. You don't have to win championships to be a great player, but I think to be considered one of the greats, because Jim Kelly's in, when you enter the Hall of Fame, you're in rarefied air, right? I mean, you're in a territory we're talking about a territory where you are the best of the best. Well, within those conversations, then it's, well, Joe Montana versus Elway versus Brady versus Peyton Manning versus, and I, showing the ability to, because again, winning championships is still, I know we had this big discussion about the NBA fan, casual fan right now, and the guy who loves the NBA is not really caring about the championship, which to which I don't understand that mentality, because all I want from my team ever is to win a championship. That's the point of being a fan, and that's the point of rooting for a team. I want to enjoy the ride, of course, but the point is I want to see my team win a championship. And I think valuing how people play in those moments and their ability to rise to that occasion does make you a step above.
But at the same time, in that very discussion devalues the way everybody else played, because it's a team sport. It's not one-on-one. It's not MMA. I mean, if you tell me that it's a heavyweight fight in a boxing match and a guy just can never win the championship, then you can say, okay, what did he not do right? But when you start to look at winning a Super Bowl, there's 53 people on your roster that all have to do their jobs.
Totally.
And as much as I want to sit there and say, hey, step up and perform, there are tons of instances of guys that have put up great stat lines in Super Bowls and still lost.
Well, and I would go the other way with it. I would say, and we're smart enough to know, I think not you and I, because we're not very smart, but I think fans are smart enough to know to go deeper into that dive that you're talking about. Ben Roethlisberger is a perfect example. The Pittsburgh Steelers won a Super Bowl with Ben Roethlisberger despite of him one time and because of him the next time. So, like, the first time they won the Super Bowl, he had the lowest quarterback rating in the history of Super Bowls.
Right.
He was awful in that Super Bowl that they won. Everybody knows that wasn't Big Ben that did that. He still has the ring on his finger. Now, the second one against the Arizona Cardinals, he's the one who actually leads the comeback and makes that unbelievable throw to Santonio Holmes in the back of the end zone. It's one of the greatest throws in Super Bowl history. So I think we have the ability as fans and sort of to be critical about those types of things when we look at them. And certainly the reason the Giants won some of those Super Bowls was because the defensive line beat the Patriots and Tom Brady, not Eli Manning. Even though Eli Manning had some great runs. I think basketball, it's much easier because it's five people.
Right.
Like football, it is. It takes 53 guys all pulling in the same direction. In basketball world, it's if you really do just have the best player, a lot of times you're going to just win. And we Golden State has the best players. Cleveland has the best players. And that's why they destroyed their conferences and ended up playing each other. And then LeBron wasn't good enough to beat them by himself.
But I think there's also part of an NBA.
He averaged a triple-double, so he was not good. LeBron was not good enough.
Right, yeah. Right. That's the argument.
Good enough.
He put up historic numbers.
Right,
there.
That's the argument, is he's spectacular, and it wasn't good enough to win a championship, so we shouldn't devalue his performance.
Right, and I don't. But I don't devalue LeBron's record because he played against a team that was just flat out better than
right.
his. It's the same as I wouldn't devalue, and as much as I know this is going to create a comment from Julian Council that's very appropriate and it's fitting for his legacy, I'm not going to devalue Peyton Manning, the NFL quarterback.
Yeah,
no, this player. I'm not going to devalue Peyton Manning, the NFL quarterback, even though, as Julian Council will constantly point out to you, how was he against Florida?
0-4.
Okay, perfect. But I'm not going to discount, I'm not going to value winning one Super Bowl I'm not going to take that one Super Bowl in Denver and make that something that changes his legacy in my mind. I mean, his legacy was how he played the position as a general whole. And yes, part of that
And he was
legacy-
a great, great player in college. Like, let's be honest. I mean, even his numbers in college were spectacular. But there is
a national title like T. Martin.
You look at Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, guys that got that one, right, that got to the mountaintop. They're viewed a little differently. And being able to lead, and especially at that position where you have such a big impact on your team, in the NBA, because it's a smaller group of people, it's just five guys, and in the NFL where the quarterback is so impactful, if you've got one, like what did we just get done talking about yesterday or on Friday? It's like if you've got a quarterback, you sign him to $30 million because you either are a team that has one or you're a team that doesn't. So you look at some of those guys that have gotten to that top of that mountaintop, they are viewed differently. Fair or unfair, they are viewed a little differently, and I'm okay with valuing championships to a point. And then at some point you have to say, yeah, Jim Kelly was pretty damn good. Yeah, Dan Marino was pretty awesome. Yeah, Phillip Rivers had a pretty good career. Like, at some point you do step back and acknowledge the career, but there is a champion level of appreciation that happens.
But even in that, Jim Plunkett is an example of somebody that put up huge numbers in his career, started and won both Super Bowls he ever appeared in, not in the Hall of Fame. And Trent Dilfer, you look at Trent Dilfer.
I mean, he's the punchline of this whole conversation.
Trent Dilfer wins a Super Bowl. So you can look at it and say, hey, there are guys that have won Super Bowls that just haven't gotten the recognition. It's a cherry on top. It can be the cherry on top. But I don't think it's the driving thing that forces legacy definement anymore because we're in a different era.
Because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar then would be like the greatest player of all time, right? Because statistically he's the greatest player of all time. Has more championships, right?
Bill Russell.
But Bill Russell doesn't have the numbers that Kareem has. We're 33,000 points
like
or whatever.
11
it is.
Rings though.
Yeah, I mean Bill Russell was spectacular. I mean they won like 8 straight championships, so which is also unprecedented.
And it's possible that when you're trying to define, you know, the best of the best versus the best of the best, that can become a tiebreaker, like a 70-second tiebreaker. But to me, it's if Paul George wants to go play for the Lakers because he wants to play in his hometown and recruit his buddies to play and has no eyes on a championship, I don't fault that because I think that's where the modern athlete is. They want to go, they want to have fun, and they want the chance to win if they can. We got to get to Corey Promman, ESPN NHL. Corey had some huge things to say about your Nashville Predators in the draft, and we've got him coming on with us next. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing, breaking down everything from a great weekend, obviously, and getting you set for as much information as we can about the newest additions to the Nashville Predators, the NHL draft over the weekend, and we wanted to get somebody on that could actually break down these guys. We can read breakdowns for you all day, and we can try and tell you what we can figure out by reading as much as possible, but why not get somebody that actually covers it, knows it, and does a heck of a job, and on top of all that, had some positive things to say about the Preds draft. That makes it even better. We're really thankful to have him this morning. NHL writer for ESPN, Corey Promman, man, we appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, sure thing, no problem. So would you have not had me on if I had negative things to say about the Predators?
Well,
actually, probably, we probably would have.
No, we'd have still had you on. It was just an added bonus. Yeah. It's like the cherry on top of the sundae that
It's good radio either way, man. Yeah, like, it's good radio either way.
So tell me, because you were very high, obviously, on Elli Tolvanen, and I'm a little curious if you've gotten any indication on why a prospect that was deemed to go higher fell as far as he did in the draft.
Well, yeah, he has a few warts in his game. I think that there was, you know, concerns that, you know, because he's not really a dynamic skater at his size is a bit of a concern. He's not really going to be a premier penalty killer on your team. You know, this guy is about skill and scoring, and there's holes in between those elements in his game. But I just see a guy who has real high-end offensive abilities, generates a ton of chances, a lot of shots, a lot of goals. And I think the Nashville is going to have to take some time to work on the rest of it. Game, but I think with time he can become an important part of their future.
Is there a comparison for him, either a big name player in the NHL or a current Predator that maybe you compare his game to from a style standpoint and a talent standpoint?
It's always hard doing comparisons. I feel like it'd be unfair for the players. Like I said before, I think the kind of player I look at is a guy who can be a potential top six forward in the NHL, not through speed, but just basically through his shot. His hockey sense and his skill, even though he's not the biggest guy, I think that could be those. There are definitely players who have made the NHL who can play that kind of role.
So, Corey, you mentioned that it's going to take a little time. If you're looking at it as a prospect and thinking about when he can actually make it here to make contributions in Nashville, what do you think a reasonable time expectation is for that?
I think there's a few factors there. It really depends on what happens in the next year where he ends up. I believe he was not admitted into Boston College as was his plan. So it depends whether he goes right into the farm system, goes to Milwaukee, or he goes to major junior for 2 years and then turns pro. If he hits the ground running in pro hockey, maybe you're talking about maybe 2 years, you know. But if it's junior, he needs to, you know, get the transition to pro hockey a little later in his career. Maybe it's more 3+.
You look at the other two guys in the first couple of rounds there, Grant Mishmash, which is a great name, of course, and then David Fairness, I believe, is how you say that. I've gotten a lot more people tweeting me about the third-round defenseman than the second-round centerman. What do you make of these two guys, and how quickly can they make an impact?
Well, I'm a big fan of both of them. I think, you know, Grant, he's a very well-rounded big forward. Probably not a guy who's as flashy as David Ferentz, who we're going to talk about in a second, but I see a guy with good skill, good two-way hockey sense. He's a big man who can make plays. Won't blow past the defense with his speed or make, you know, highlight real plays, but he's just really steady, does a lot of things well. And I think he'll be an important part of North Dakota next season. And for David, I see a guy who's probably one of the quickest skaters in the draft class. Just, you know, blows by people, can make really difficult rushes, seem easy. I think the reason why he fell is just because he's small. And I don't think he's horrible, but he's not like a great defensive player as a defenseman, and so he's going to need some time to tighten up that part of his game. But he's one of the few players who can really make a high-level rush in this draft class.
Would Roman Josi be too high of a comparison? Obviously, Josi much better defensively, but just say from a potential standpoint, is that the style of game he plays?
I guess you could say it's the style, but you know, Josi was a lot different as a prospect too. He was bigger, so you saw, you know, at least he can win battles a little easier than Ferentz will have to do against 6'2", 6'3" forwards. So that is the concern really going forward for him. But I think, you know, when you look at the way he can rush the puck, he does that in a very dynamic way, like Roman used to when he was a prospect.
We're talking to Corey Prauman, NHL writer for ESPN Insider. So Corey, one of our big overarching discussions going into the draft was the strategy of David Poile. Would he sort of buy in more to right now and less to the future, given the window that's open? No movement, though, from the team. Were you surprised that the team sort of stayed put and didn't try to do any big acquisitions on draft day?
To a degree. I mean, I obviously know, you know, they were so close to winning their first Stanley Cup, and I think incentives seem to be there to try and keep on pushing, but I think they have so many good young players that were a part of that run. I mean, I think when you look at when Kevin Fiala comes back and he's playing for a full year and just gets another year older, and they are really losing a ton of key players. Obviously, they lost Neil to the expansion draft, but I see there's still a lot there for the next few years that could be important to the team. So I don't know why you'd want to mess with that too significantly. And this is always, you know, and Nashville, you know, for better or for worse, has never really been a team that's going to go out and get the big free agent and spend to the cap. So they need to continue to draft well to make sure that they have the continued success they have had for the last decade. And that's been an important part of David Poile's model in terms of team building.
You know, many of us in this city would still have the Blackhawks as the favorite to win the division next year, obviously very early before free agency in the draft, or before free agency in some trades. But Chicago did a lot of movement and made a lot of trades there on Friday. Is there something wrong with Chicago, or is this team still the position to be the best team in the division?
I think it's something they've been going through every year, just because of all the big contracts they handed out to a variety of players over the years. It seems every summer they're in cap trouble, and they find a way to squeeze their way out of the cap trouble every single summer in a new and interesting way. And this was just and it didn't seem like it was a lot of it was capillary, but just cutting $300,000 there, cutting another $500,000 there can make a difference in terms of getting them under the number they need to be at. I think, you know, Brenton Saad is a very good player. Connor Murphy's a decent player, so I don't think they took huge steps back, but they are definitely a different team from where they were last year. And it remains to be seen if it makes them a better team.
Follow him on Twitter, @CoreyPrauman. Read him on NHL ESPN Insider. Man, we appreciate your time this morning coming on and helping us break it all down, Corey. Thanks a lot, man.
Yep, thank you.
Great stuff from Corey. And the interesting thing is I want to get right into what he just said about Chicago. They take a big step back. Not a big step back. Sorry, they take not a big step back, just a step back. To which I would say that sort of matches up, though, with some of the concerns our people last week were saying, in that the division is so tightly compacted and it's so tightly contested that any step back is significant in that sense. So maybe at the very least it has you looking around as a Preds fan saying, we may have lost James Neal, but there's also some chaos everywhere else, at least in perception.
Well, and I think if you start to stack up the rosters, like first of all, the Predators swept them in the postseason and are chasing them, right? So you cannot argue that they're not breathing down their neck and gaining ground, because they just did. They swept them in the postseason. Then you go, all right, Preds lose James Neal, and that's it off the entire roster. So now they may make a trade. But really, Fisher is going to be a huge discussion point. So if you lose Fisher, that's another big piece. But the Blackhawks lost somebody in expansion. Then they lost Marian Hossa. Then they lost Panarin. Then they lost Hjalmarsson. So while he said they brought in players that aren't huge steps back, which I agree, I don't think they took huge steps back in those situations, they also fired assistant coaches. Like they are making moves like they need to make moves to win next year. So, and to his point again, we've seen this from Stan Bowman over the last few years. They've had to do some cap magic to make their numbers work because they've got such high-priced, top-level players. Bottom line is they had to make moves because it didn't work last year. Even though they were the best team in the division, and I think that's what's lost in all of this, is they still went, like, whatever, 109 points and won the division, whatever it was, that it didn't work in one series with us. Doesn't mean that they need to – that they're panicking. They're doing a lot of things, but they still were the best team in the conference last year.
Well, the Preds didn't panic, obviously, over the weekend. They stayed where they were in the draft, and they ended up getting somebody they've been high on all year. David Poile talked about it. You'll hear from him and what he's thought all year, not just on draft night, of this prospect. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Yeah!
You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc., Mount Juliet. So we were just talking about the panic in Chicago, or at least perceived panic. Maybe the
I think it's panic.
I mean,
I saw references to they haven't had this big of a fire in Chicago since whatever was the Great Fire,
wow,
like 1860s or something like that. When was the Great Fire? Maybe Julian can look that up so we can actually be factually correct on the show.
That's overrated.
Facts are overrated.
And it's been interesting, you know.
We got Chicago intern back there.
Yeah, she's here.
What is the Great Fire of Chicago, the Windy City? That's why it's called the Second City, right? Because they had to rebuild the city after a fire burnt it to the ground.
They had to do it like didn't they have to rebuild the city twice?
I think it might have happened twice. Why does the person from Chicago not know about this?
Well, I God only knows. So we've been having the conversation though in
1871, by the way.
It was only once.
Quick Google search says the Great Fire of 1871.
Didn't a cow set the city on fire or something like that?
It was in and around a small barn.
Well, she said she can give us entire history because she knows all this stuff.
It was Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Only a cow would burn
Mrs.
down Chicago.
Mrs. O'Leary's cow burnt Chicago
in
to the ground.
In a goat versus the city's team.
Well, a quick Google search of the writers in Chicago will tell you that they're having much the same approach that yes. That between, and I think it's
Mrs.
a combination
O'Leary's
effect.
Cow.
I think it's not just about the Blackhawks. It's also about the Bulls. So I think there's sort of a little bit of a pile-on effect. I think maybe Chicago was already a little sensitive about the whole Jimmy Butler being given away for used socks. So
why are you trying to talk about sports here? I want to talk about Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
I think in the process of it. When you think about sort of Chicago taking a small step back, the Preds in this process of the offseason, we've been waiting for a big acquisition because we want them to take a massive step forward. Well, what David Poile did last night was just stayed where he was. He was very Poile. Like, he just did he did sort of what makes sense. You look at it afterwards, you're like, oh, that's pretty smart. That's why he's David Poile. That's why he's the executive of the year at this point. Mm. And in the process of picking 30th, we sat there and said, hey, don't have great expectations. When you're picking 30th, you're not going to get somebody. But in fact, Poile disagreed. And David Poile talked about who they received in the draft and talked about they got somebody that's been high on their minds all year long. This is Poile talking about it.
Sorry about that.
Do you want me to fake it? I can just fake it.
I think we are. I mean, our scouts got a lot of confidence in them. Jeff Kelty does a really good job. He knows exactly what we need and what we want to get. You know, I think we've worked together for so many years that we know the types of players that we draft, and our scouts do a good job. I really feel on the first pick and Tolvanen that we, in our minds, we got very, very fortunate, you know, being 30th pick. That's a player that we've had in our top 10 all year long. And I've looked at a lot of different other lists that come out and just, you know, reading and all. To me, nobody ever had him lower than like 20th in the draft. So, to me, I feel very fortunate because it's really the type of player that we're looking for. He's a fast winger that has got an unbelievable release and he can score goals. I mean, that's the type of player we've been looking for, trying to add to our lineup in the last, you know, three or four drafts. These offensive players, and I think we got a really good one there in our first pick.
That's David Poile talking about top pick Elie Tolvanen. And by the way, Jeremy Gover has confirmed for us the Boston College is out for Tolvanen, so it's expected that he's going to come here quickly. I do want to give – I've been giving Gover and Willie major props all morning, and in the process of it, as a couple of you guys have reminded me on Twitter, I left off Justin Bradford and his work at the draft coverage.
Yeah, jerk.
So that's on me. I'm an idiot. Great work
by
the entire –
You're not an idiot. You're just a jerk.
Well, that's fair. The entire team that covered it did a really nice job of informing everybody. It was great to hear smart hockey being broken down in that way. So obviously you just heard from Poile, and again, it's a reminder that Poile had a strategy the whole way, right? He was he was going to sit and see what happens and then make a decision. This was not, this isn't video game hockey. It's real hockey. And he's obviously taking an approach of, we're going to build for the future and trust our guys to continue to develop. And that's where I think they find themselves today with these draft picks.
Yeah, and the quote from David Poile over the weekend, we will not be touching our defense in the near future. I don't know how any more clear he has to say that.
Yeah.
So if a trade in any capacity involves one of those top four defensemen, that to me says that's out permanently. Permanently as permanently can be.
Right.
Until
that's out permanently until a really good offer comes by,
right.
In which case,
woo! Yeah, and then that's the trade deadline, and all of a sudden, you know, Auston Matthews is available. So we will not be touching our defense in the near future. That is what David Poile said about his top four. And so I think we all agree that's what we wanted to see. We didn't want to see, like I said, I heard 3D on Friday basically saying one of their four questions was, would you trade Matthias Ekholm for Matt Duchene? And I think they were using Matthias Ekholm as a placeholder of whichever one of the four you think is the,
right,
quote, worst, which is, you know, silly because they're all great. I don't, and we talked about it that morning, I don't want to go into a playoffs run and not be able to say, hey, this team has the best blue line in the league. That I want to go to bat with that. I'll deal with everything else. I'll find other players. I'll find some offense. We'll find skaters. We'll find centermen. I want to start the playoff run with every other team looking at the Nashville Predators and saying they have the best defense in the league. And I would start that way in a postseason run in a league that is craving defensemen. I want to be the team that has the most defensemen. And that's, I think David Poile is obviously in agreement with that.
I think that also plays into the second half of the regular season. When the team started to get better is when the defensemen started to really play well together, when they all started to get a feel for it. And that's something that, you know, you heard here a couple of weeks ago talking to PK about the difference in sort of adjusting to the system and getting to know the guys. And now that they have adjusted to that system, I would expect the Preds to come out better this year than they did last year. I would expect them to play more consistent hockey in the first half of the year than they did last year, because they've sort of ironed some of those things out. And to the point over the weekend made by David Poile and many others, the contributors that popped up in the playoffs, at some point you have to look at it and say, hey, let's see what we've got here. And it could actually be that they're looking at the Pontus Aubergs of the world and saying, hey, I think there's an expanded role. They're looking at the Kevin Fialas of the world and saying, hey, when he's healthy, there's an expanded role. I mean, they could be in that situation.
Yeah, Kevin Fiala is now a second-line winger. You got Goudreau as a starting fourth-line center, and you've got Pontus Aubergs as a starting third-line center. All promotions, in theory, from last year. So all things that we talked about last week on the show is, if you stand pat and you don't do anything, those are players that could step into those roles. And so maybe they feel like, we don't need to go out and get a young player. We've got those young players to develop. Now, it does feel like you still need a second-line centerman. And I think there still could be a trade in the works at some point in the future, but it won't involve a top four defenseman. And you sort of need to know what Mike Fisher is going to do first before you kind of go down that road. So I think Poile, there's, you know, basically the article says that Poile's going to reach out to Fisher this week, and they're going to have a conversation and begin that process of figuring out, does he want to come back? Is he ready for retirement? You know, whatever it may be.
And so, I don't think that that's an accident that there's the timing released on that too, because we've heard in the past Fisher was going to have a conversation with Poile, but we've never heard a lot of timing associated with it. What we now hear in a got to reach out to him this week, it's no accident that free agency is right around the corner. I mean, I think that's their way of saying, hey, we need to get some sort of an indication from Mike before we go into the free agent period, because I would still expect them to be aggressive in free agency if there's somebody there that they see that they think can replace or augment or be better even just at some of these positions. I mean, this is a team that is in a window, so we didn't see aggressiveness in the draft per se. We saw patience in the draft. Maybe that means we can expect to see a little more aggressiveness here. I mean, that's the other side of the coin. You know, maybe they're going to come into this free agency period, hopefully by then have any idea of what Fish is going to do, which will allow them to know what they have to spend and what they need to spend it on going into what should be an important free agent season.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. I got a tweet from Johnny on Twitter, says, I just always assumed Mrs. O'Leary's cow was related to the cow from Smashville. I don't get that.
Hmm.
Do you get that?
Yeah, I don't get that.
I don't get that. Johnny, you have to explain yourself a little bit further. Also, controversy on Wikipedia about Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
There's controversy.
Yeah,
about
it says
Silver
other allegedly knocked over a lantern that started the fire of 1871 in Chicago, but also states there's other rumors that a group of men were gambling inside a barn and knocked over the lantern. I would lean towards the group of dudes probably drinking and gambling in 1871. I don't know why Miss O'Leary gets dragged to the mud.
I tend to blame the bovine here.
You know what? The cow never had the opportunity to stand up and defend himself.
Exactly.
I mean, the cow never got to be represented in front of a jury of the cow's peers. I mean, there's
probably
no,
because they were eating her.
Right. So there's no right. That's.
But Mrs. O'Leary dragged through the mud. Her name forever on Wikipedia as being the part of the Great Fire of 1871. I think Mrs. O'Leary's got a bad rap in this deal.
That's.
I blame the. I think dudes gambling in a barn. You know, you get into gambling, you know, you fist the cuffs, all of a sudden you knock over a lantern, all of a sudden the entire city burns down.
Gambling's the devil.
I think that, Braden, you should just dedicate part of your life.
I think history lessons are important.
To righting the wrong of Mrs. O'Leary's cow. We can get you a website and everything. You can start to get the people informed. Speaking of getting the people informed, we've been having a conversation earlier this morning about expectations for athletes and what they want. Do they want to win championships or do they want to play with their friends? What do they want? What's okay? Well, that conversation sort of plays into what you guys want and what you guys expect, especially in the SEC and in SEC football. Can anyone contend with Alabama? And is it okay if the answer is no? We'll get into some of this next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.